Today on the Rising Coaches Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Rising Coaches Podcast. I'm your host, Brian Bender, and today's episode is brought to you in part by one of our favorite sponsors, Dr. Dish. Dr. Dish is by far the best shooting machine on the market. And if you want a discount off a new machine, be sure to mention Rising Coaches to save up to $300. For more information, visit drdishbasketball.com or visit one of their social media platforms at Dr. Dish B-Ball. Also, if you're not already a member and interested in joining the largest coaching tree in basketball, visit risingcoaches.com to sign up today. You'll build genuine relationships with other coaches, have access to amazing content that will allow you to develop your craft, expand your network, and see job opportunities on our member site that don't get posted anywhere else. For more information, visit risingcoaches.com. All right, today's special guest, Coach Bruce Hamburger from Columbia University. Coach, how are you doing today?
Doing great, Brian. Thanks for having me on. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, excited to hear from you today. And, you know, I've been a big fan of yours over the last couple of years and found you on social media and kind of been following you. But I'm excited to visit with you today and learn more a little bit about your coaching journey and, you know, provide some wisdom to all of our listeners today. But, hey, take us, you know, through your journey a little bit from the start of, you know, where you got started in coaching all the way to where you're at Columbia now.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, you know, I guess prototypical kid who loved to play, wasn't good enough to really go anywhere in the basketball world from a playing standpoint. At a young age, I realized, and again, I had a good mentors growing up as a young kid, just good role models within the town I grew up in. I'm a North Jersey guy and just had really good people that, like, wow, that's what a coach, that's what a teacher should be. That were, you know, just very influential to someone as a young kid that, again, just loved to play and just wasn't good enough. So, you know, I think at a young age, I kind of had that sense of, I want to be a high school coach and a high school teacher. And I probably would have been really content with that and continue to play, you know, as growing up and just loved the game and was fortunate enough to, you know, as a college student, I was able to coach it actually at my high school. So, you know, crazy, got cut literally 4 years in a row. And my high school team, we were pretty good, never played, ended up coaching there as a young guy for 3 years while I was finishing college. And again, crazy how this profession works. You know, we had a top 50 player in the country, this kid, Mark Bryan, his name was, who ended up playing at Seton Hall. Recruiting was different back then. You know, there were literally no restrictions. So, you know, the guys who wanted him, they were there every game. And, you know, people, plane tickets were cheap. You could fly in, fly out. You could literally get to the airport. We were 20 minutes from Newark Airport. You could get to the airport 45 minutes before the game and be seated at our game at 7 o'clock on a Tuesday or a Friday night. So I just had such access to college coaches from all over the country. And to be truthful, the guy that I worked for, the head coach, didn't really want to be involved in the recruiting process. So everyone went through me and I kind of filtered all the recruitment through Mark's family and with the college coaches. So, you know, I was literally a 21, 22 year old kid meeting, you name it, in the country, top 50 programs. I mean, he probably had 75, 80 offers. So it was just a constant stream of communication, phone calls, and just people in our gym. And as I was finishing my college degree, I was kind of, you know, it just struck me one day, like who wants to teach? I want to be a college coach. I want to be able to fly around the country and go see this kid and develop a relationship with the kid and the family and the high school coach and the AU guy. And just, you know, it just really literally just jumped out to me one day of like, yeah, I don't want to be a teacher. I want to be a college coach. And I was fortunate enough through connections and just people I knew in New Jersey to be able to land a graduate assistant in a Division III school. Back then it was Trenton State College. Now it's the College of New Jersey, which is one of the better D3 conferences, the New Jersey Athletic Conference in the country. So for 2 years, I was able to be a graduate assistant at D3 level. And again, I know everyone wants to get their first job and, you know, be the associate head coach sitting on the bench in the Sweet 16. But the reality of it is, being a D3 GA was the best thing that could have happened to me, because I was able to recruit, I was able to scout, I was able to coach. We were a very good program, went to the NCAA tournament 2 years, and it just gave me a view of the lower levels of basketball, but how good they were. And I still, you know, I was a D3 head coach for 11 years, so I have a great respect for that level and understand how good that level is. But it enabled me as a young guy to coach and to teach and to figure out the recruiting process and how to be organized and, you know, just all the things that go into being a college coach, and mostly developing relationships, you know, and working camp back then, you know, which is obviously a little bit different nowadays, where you don't have that same experience. But, you know, working 6-7 weeks at camp in a summer, and that led me to my next job. I was able to, well, not even able. I called up the guys at Seton Hall, who I knew. Obviously, Mark Bryant went there. I called up PJ Carlissimo, the head coach, who obviously I had developed a good relationship with in the recruiting process. There was a local D1 job in Trenton, Rider University, which was right down the road from where I was working at. And basically, like, PJ, I'm going to use you as a reference, if that's okay. Any help you could do, if the guy calls you, any good word, blah, blah, blah. He's like, you know what? He told me he was going to call me. He said, I was going to reach out to you. I have a GA spot. Would you be interested? I grew up 5 minutes from Seton Hall, literally. I used to sneak in the gym as a young kid when Bill Raftery was the coach and go play ball when I was 13, 14 years old. It was literally a 5-7 minute walk. So I was like, it's a no brainer. Like, sign me up. I'm ready. And, you know, was able to do that for a couple of years as a GA. And then it led into staying on staff for, you know, 7 more years and various, again, back then there was the whole restricted earnings spot and the volunteer assistant, but I was able to stay on staff there. And again, I was 27, 28 years old, sitting on the bench in a national championship against Michigan in 1989. And, you know, it's a crazy, as you well know, just a crazy business that takes on a lot of different paths. But, you know, to me, it all comes back to connections and relationships and hopefully doing things the right way. That because, again, as a 20-year-old guy coaching a JV team and being a varsity assistant at Columbia High School, you know, PJ saw something in me that years later when he had a spot. And I'm glad it happened that way. I didn't go there with Mark Bryan. I coached Mark, but I didn't get a job there because of Mark. Mark was already a very established player at Seton Hall. So it was just something that PJ saw in me, hopefully how I conducted myself as a young guy, where he felt, you know what, I can have that guy help us on the staff. And then it just proceeded to other things. You know, I was able to get a Division III head coaching job where I went to school, actually, Kane University in New Jersey for 11 years. And had a great run there. And, you know, from there went to other, you know, coaching WNBA for 2 years, was a D2 assistant in New Jersey. I guess the crazy thing with me is I've never had to leave the New York, New Jersey area in my coaching career. So it's, you know, and, you know, went from the WNBA to St. Peter's University, which, you know, in the Sweet 16 now, and obviously, you know, everyone has found out about St. Peter's. I was there for 3 years. You know, my first year there, we were fortunate enough to go to the tournament, and went from there to Fairleigh Dickinson University in New Jersey for 9 years. And, you know, didn't have my contract renewed there last year, and really felt, you know, that I was probably going to be the first year out of coaching. Couldn't find a job, just, you know, was involved with a million different things. And for a lot of different reasons, none of them worked out. And late in the summer, was able to land a spot on Columbia staff, and, you know, very fortunate, very thankful that happened. And, you know, that's kind of where we are right now, you know, 30 some odd years later, and, you know, still haven't worked a day in my life, as you know, probably many days you think that way too. It's like, we're coaching, you know, we're very fortunate to do what we do, and just really thankful. It's been, you know, a great ride that I'm still wake up and say, yeah, you know what, I get to go coach in the morning, every morning, and really thankful for what I'm still doing.
Yeah, your journey, quite the journey for sure. And it's very, very unique that you've been able to stay in one area or one, city for as long as you have. And that's, a tribute to you and your personality and what you've been able to do. But, there's a couple of things that you mentioned that I think, we should highlight. The first one is, you talked about the GA level or your first job in coaching. And a lot of people, kind of get in that mindset, even players, like, hey, it's D1 or bust, or it's, I want to be at the highest level at the, make the most money, do these different types of things. And what I'd say through my experiences is, yes, I was at the University of Minnesota and it was great. And I learned a ton there. I'm very grateful for my experiences there. But where I learned the most in terms of, my reps and my voice and coaching and understanding how to recruit and understand how to, do more with less, was when I was at the junior college level as a part-time assistant. And for me, same type of thing. I was fortunate. I was on a team that had 12 Division I players on it. But you got to meet a lot of different people at those levels where you're getting recruited, but also get to recruit. And getting those repetitions, I think, are always important, especially as people are getting out of school and doing different things or, your first job. If you want to coach, you have to coach. And at some point, whether it's high school, whether it's AAU, whether it's that, small college, junior college, Division I, Division II, there's all great levels, but what you get to do at different places, especially with what you're talking about, the restrictions and how rules have changed and who's allowed to do what and on the floor and on the, on the road. But I think those things are really important that we don't get caught up in levels when we're looking at the next job or, get caught up in the hype of what it is and playing on TV. Of course, that's everybody's dream. Everyone wants to be, the next Coach K and different things. But, for being realistic and being where you're at and being where, 2 feet in, I think is extremely important. And that's something that you've obviously done to continue to grow, to be a head coach, to be at multiple different levels. That's awesome. Definitely awesome. Tell us a little bit about the WNBA experience. So you had been in college for a long time and, Division III, Division I, you said Division II at times, but what was it about the WNBA that was a different experience? What did you take from there that's made you a better coach, maybe on the men's side or just in general as a coach that you learned at that level?
Yeah, it was a terrific experience. Now, I was fortunate enough to work for the New York Liberty, right in New York City where I live. So again, as a young kid who was a Knicks fan, I can't tell you how cool just to be at the Garden every night, when we played home games. And I still tell people, one of the best things about it, like if we had a 7 o'clock game, the players would start coming in for workouts about 4:30, 4:45, and literally at 4 o'clock I would go out. There would be no one there in the building. The lights were half on, and just go shooting by myself for like, and again, as coaches, you never, like, you grow up as a kid, all you want to do is play ball, and then you become a coach. You never just stand there in a gym and take shots. And I would literally, before the game and before the players would come in, would just go out into Madison Square Garden and shoot by myself for a half hour. It's like, oh my God, like if you told me as a 15-year-old kid you'd be able to do this and this is where you were working, I would have paid to do that. So that was cool. But it was a great, just a great learning experience, and on so many levels. I think one, just the professionalism of the players really struck me, and the I'm trying to think of the right word, just the understanding they had of like such a privilege they have to have these jobs, where I think at times, at the college level, guys and the women, they kind of take for granted like what they get and what they have and all that come, they're getting a free education and, just everything that goes into being a college athlete. I think at times, you kind of take that for granted, where the players here realize there's only whatever, 10, 12 teams in the league, 12 spots. Like, this is special to be here. So, I mean, they were just so professional in their approach. An approach meaning anything. Their rehab, they're watching video, they're taking care of their bodies, their rest, their skill workouts, their individual workouts. So, I think it really struck me of just, again, the level of professionalism. I think one of the great things it gave me, and again, I was coming off right from being a head coach, basically, I had worked 1 year at a D2 school, but I had been a head coach for 11 years. And you know, as a head coach, you get not distracted is not the right word, but you get just torn in so many different levels that you kind of lose what got you into coaching. And again, to me as a young guy, it was being in the gym with players and rebounding for a guy and talking to a guy when he wasn't playing well and keeping his head in the right spot. Those were, I think, especially as a young coach, where you have such a closer relationship just from an age standpoint with your players when you're starting out, that you can just have a different type of relationship with them. Then you become a head coach and you definitely, you know, you take a couple steps away from that relationship. You're the guy determined in playing time. You're taking a kid out of a game. You're not running a set for him. So there's definitely like that line gets a little bit wider between it's just a different relationship as a head coach. Coaching in WNBA for 2 years really got me back to being in a gym with players. And you know, the kid who wasn't playing, who would come in a half hour early and get skill workout, and before the game, knowing that they weren't going to play, they were on quote unquote the injured list. So they would come in before the players got on the court, get another skill workout in, and then keeping them motivated, talking to them, texting with them. Just so I think that's really one of the biggest takeaways that I got from that. The other one I think as a college coach, and you know, as college coaches, we probably don't, and I'm really generalizing, but we probably don't use our time as wisely, and we do a lot of things at times in practice that, you know, we saw a drill, we love it, but if you really look at it, like, why are we doing this? Like this skill is never occurring in a game. You know, it's not really happening, but I like the drill, or my coach did it, or this is how we've always done things. But I think in the WNBA, you know, you're getting training camp started, and in a week you're playing. So like, you can't have wasted time in practice. And a lot of you may not have your whole squad. Kids are finishing up over in Europe, you know, your better players. So like, you have to just be so efficient with your time and get things in quickly, and using the 5-on-0 reps properly to get the teaching and just getting stuff ingrained. So, cause you're playing in a week. So, you know, I think that was a big takeaway for me. And I always look at that where I'm coaching now. And again, I haven't been a head coach since then. So, you know, if I'm fortunate enough to ever get a head coaching job again, I think I would do things much differently. But I'm always looking to just kind of evaluate, like, why are we doing it? You know, and not in a negative way, but just like, what is the purpose? Can we be using our time wisely? And I think, again, that's one of my biggest takeaways of just using time wisely, being efficient. You know, it's a long season. When we're on the court, are we being precise with our time? So, you know, those were some of the good takeaways I had. But I loved it. It was a great, you know, and again, I don't get the coaches who don't watch women's basketball. That really, to me, astounds me, because the level of women's basketball is so high now and so good. And I think the other takeaway I will say, not to keep answering your question long, but you know, you watched women, the high level women's games, like, you can really see how people run their stuff and run their sets, because they don't break out of it as much as men do. You know, men see a sliver, and again, I'm generalizing, but they see a sliver of space and it's like, all right, that play's over, I'm trying to create a shot. Where I think the women are just so precise running stuff and the efficiency of what they're trying to accomplish. So I think that was also a big takeaway of just the ability to stay within an offense and reading things and getting stuff done properly from an offensive point of view.
Yeah, that's really, really practical. And I totally relate to you talking about, you know, as a head coach, how the relationship changes. And I think, like, especially as an assistant or as a GA or any type of thing where you can provide value. Obviously, working out players is a big part of, you know, player development. And but I think it's like the easiest way or the best way to create a relationship with players is that sweat equity. You know, yep. Being with them in a spot where they're working hard, you're working hard side by side with them, fighting through adversity with them. With there's some adversity or pressure, but there's no pressure. Like it's like you said, when you're the head coach and you're making those hard decisions every single day, you can't be the guy that yells at them and also gives them a hug at the same time. And that's a major adjustment that I struggled with, especially my first year as a head coach when I actually recruited majority of my team as a primary assistant recruiter. And so like when I became the head coach, it was like literally I had the best relationship with the kids. The guy that was yelling at them, screaming at them, you know, trying to make them better. And it was a tough adjustment. I do feel like college coaches waste a lot of time. I think that's something that, you know, we don't study the game as well as, you know, what they're doing at the NBA or the WNBA level, where they're very practical with what they're doing. You know, very intentional with their actions and what they're actually spending their time on and stuff like that. And I think that's another thing to note is just going back and refreshing. How we've always done things is probably the most dangerous phrase you could possibly have in coaching and different things. You use the word a lot in the since this podcast has started. You use the word, you know, the privilege and very fortunate. You know, gratitude is a very important life skill. Talk to us a little bit about, you know, why do you keep using those words? And, you know, how have you, you know, quote unquote, survived for multiple years in this profession? And, you know, talk a little bit about, you know, gratitude and what that means to you.
Yeah, you know, I think, again, like, we're not, you know, we're not curing COVID or cancer. Like, we're coaches. Like, we're so fortunate to be doing it. I mean, like, what job do you get to, you know, go to work and sweat and coach basketball? I mean, like, and again, that's always been one of my pet peeves. Like, don't take yourself so seriously in this profession, you know? And again, in 2 weeks, we'll see it, you know, at the Final Four, you know, like you see people and it's like, they literally think like they're solving like the world problems and, you know, the stuff that there's so much more in the world. It's so much more. I mean, when we're doing it, it's the most important thing. And that's kind of always how I've always felt like, yeah, those 2 hours a day and you want your players to have that mindset, like, when we're on the court, yeah, there is nothing more important in the world going on. But in the grand scheme of life, like, come on, like, we're coaching basketball. Like, get over yourself. Don't take yourself so seriously. Again, in the moment, it's real serious. But so I don't know. I've just always had that. And again, part of it is who you work with and who you work for. You know, like you said, you work for Tubby Smith. I mean, there's not a better guy. And he was one of the guys I first met him. He was at VCU, actually, with Kevin Eastman. They were the two assistants trying to recruit my guy, Mark Bryan, in high school. And that's where I first – so, like, think about that as a 20-year-old guy. Like, those are two of the first people that you really come in contact with. Like, you can't have two better role models than that. And, again, two guys that have survived in this business for a long time that are – you know, as good of people as you'll find. You know, again, PJ Carlissimo, who – you know, I was fortunate to work for, who, again, could be the toughest guy and the hardest coach to play for, as demanding as anyone. But when he wasn't coaching, he was just a normal guy. And I don't know, I've just tried to kind of have that mindset, like, just be a good person and be thankful for what you do and hopefully, you know, be a good role model for your players. Because, again, I just hope as coaches and obviously – you know, your community is a lot of young coaches who are just starting. Obviously, Rising Coaches, as the name says. But, you know, like, kids remember, players remember what you say to them. So I just think it's really incumbent upon us as coaches to just, like, be good people and you know, just be say the right thing. And to your point a couple minutes ago, like, be intentional what you're saying. Don't just be overly emotional and say things. And again, we've all done it. You say things that you can't take back and you regret driving home from practice. Like, did I really say that to this kid or to my team? And I think as I've gotten older, I've gotten much better with that. You know, I've really tried to just take the emotion out of it. And you know what? The kid's not missing a shot on purpose. Now, again, the kid's not going to class, if the kid's late, the kid's not paying attention. You know, I guess the biggest thing now to me that really gets me is like with the scouting reports. You know, like we have with technology, like we're giving you the diagrams, we're giving you video. Like that's kind of the thing now that sets me off, because yeah, you're not paying attention. But in the grand scheme of things, like we're just coaching basketball. So like just, I don't know, as a coach, just be a good guy and just, again, coach someone the way you'd want them to coach you, or more importantly, probably how you want them to coach your kids. I mean, that kind of always cracks me up. Like when you see guys with sometimes, and I think coaches' behavior has gotten much better. And again, it's had to with social media and with you know, you can't hide anymore. But there are times I kind of scratch my head, like, real, like you would tolerate that with your kid by his coach? But this is what we're doing. So I just think, again, trying to be a good role model, trying to be someone that hopefully younger coaches, if they see me or see how I behave, and just treating people the right way, you know. And again, I think it does go back to, you know, and I feel bad for the generation of young coaches now where they don't have that same opportunity to work. I think working camps was so influential back in the day with the development of coaches, because you just, you know, you had to kind of go into wherever it was, a college camp or a recruiting camp, and just, all right, here's 10 kids you never met before, figure out how to coach them. And here's 30 coaches or 50 coaches that you've never met. All right, you're doing stations with this guy and you're reffing with that guy. And, you know, at the end of the night when the kids are finally put to bed and bed checks over, okay, you're sitting in a room, you know, maybe in a basement of a dorm with a grease board and, you know, pizzas and sodas and beers and talking basketball for 2 more hours after a long day, and just trying to figure out how to coexist with people. And I, you know, that is something I wish the young generation of coaches was able to be exposed to, that, because, you know, it just gave you such you just touched on so many areas, you know, like, all right, you're sitting there, all of a sudden you got, you know, you got the eraser in your hand or a piece of chalk, and someone's asking you, all right, well, what do you guys do? And now you got it as a young coach in front, you know, kind of get the attention of 40, 50 coaches, you know, who are eating pizza and everyone's telling their war stories. But all right, here's our transition game, or here are two good out of bounds plays, and just to be able to communicate in that manner. So I, again, long-winded answer, I just think it's just being thankful for what we do and treating people the right way, and you know, just kind of, I don't know, just doing it the right way. And everyone has a different definition of what the right way is, but you know, I just think there's so much value in that, of just being a good guy and good person, hopefully, and you know, impacting your players and also the people you work with and the people you're working for.
Definitely. Again, you keep bringing up some really cool points that, you know, I just want to reiterate on, like the camp thing. I think, you know, me being at the University of Minnesota, we had large camps. You know, Tubby Smith Basketball Camps is probably one of the biggest in the country, you know, helped, you know, gross revenue probably over $1 million over a 6-year period. And it's so unique, the shift in how camps were, you know, even my first couple of years there, to how they were towards the end, of the people that we hired. I didn't get to go work a lot of camps, but we were bringing in a lot of people into our camp. And so, you know, recycling and getting to know, you know, 25 to 30 new coaches every single summer. And it helped parlay me into this job here at Southwest Mississippi. One of the guys that worked our camps was Thomas Gray, and he was the head coach here who hired me. And, you know, I think that stuff's really important, but it's also shifted because there's too many camps. There's a lot of camps that are money pits, and there's different things that are not as valued in terms of different things. Like Point Guard College does a really good job, and you know, different camp, you know, Hoop Group, and different camps that existed back then, where now it's almost like glorified babysitting and different things that kind of go into it, which is kind of unique. You mentioned something about, you know, technology and scouting report and focus. And I think focus is an extremely important thing that we sometimes miss with our players and with technology. It kind of works in your advantage, but also could be a disadvantage. So trying to challenge guys to be more focused and being present where their feet are, I think is extremely important life skill to go along with it. You being a guy who's kind of that started, you know, deck to deck VHS all the way to now computer system and things, how have you stayed up with technology? And like I said at the beginning, like I'm a big social media guy, and you know, how I was attracted to you in the first place was your ability to give materials online and utilize social media. So talk a little bit about how you've utilized social media to grow, to learn, to keep getting better, and then sharing that with other people.
Yeah, I appreciate your comments on that, because I do think it's something that I've been, again, very intentional and focused on as I've gotten older in the coaching profession. Of I never wanted to be that guy, and we all see him, you know, especially in the summer recruiting, who couldn't figure out how to use his phone and get an email and send a text. You know, you see it all the time with the, you know, the quote unquote older assistant with his young guy there showing him how to use his phone. And I never wanted to be that guy. So I've just been very conscious. Again, I'm not perfect with it. I can do a lot better, but I've always just been just very aware. Like, what are the trends? What's the next thing? You know how to on my laptop use Synergy, use I'll be the first to admit, for a couple of years I wasn't good with editing, because we had guys on our staff and I kind of just did it my way, and I'd hand them, you know, two sheets of paper, hey, here are the clips I want for this scout. But I figured out how to do it myself, because you know what, I got to be kind of self-dependent and rely on myself. And but yeah, I just think there's so much at our fingertips that if we don't take advantage of, and again, I think that's, to me as a young coach, like you got to be really high level functioning in all these areas, social media, editing, video work, recruiting databases, know what the different, you know, databases are. So if you get a job at a new school, you have somewhat of a sense of what they're using. You know, the technology is obviously, you know, crazy in today's world, but you can't lose sight still of, it's still about people. It's not about your phone or your iPad or your laptop. It's still about that kid that you're coaching that maybe has something else going on in his life. And, you know, yeah, why, to your point, all right, kids do struggle with focus. Why? You know, like what is going on right now that you're not, like, this is important stuff we're doing, or practice or whatever the moment is, the walkthrough, video work, and you're not, you know, you're not here totally. Why? So I do think it still goes back to that relationship and the ability to communicate one-on-one, and, you know, not send a kid a text at night, how you doing, but literally talking. And I think the ability to text kind of allows a kid at times, and I've seen it many times, as I'm sure you have, like, they're not telling you that there's something going on, but they are telling you. And if you're smart enough and you have a good enough relationship, you're able to kind of see through that text and know that there's something there, and get one-on-one time with the kid and talk it through and figure it out. But yeah, I think the ability to get players to focus is one of the more challenging things that we have as coaches in today's world. Because again, they're just getting bombarded with so many from so many different areas, you know, be it the social media, be it the, you know, the people in their ear, from their families, from their friends, from their AAU people. And, you know, again, I know everyone says it, but like, if we're not getting our message to them, God knows what message they're hearing. So you just, I think as a coach, it's just a constantly evolving process of speaking to them. And again, from a professional standpoint of just knowing what is out there and what the trends are. Because yeah, to your point, I mean, when I first started Seton Hall, I think we were literally the first school in the country that had gotten an editing system. Someone in Pennsylvania that somehow, you know, again, five different degrees of separation. Someone I knew this guy, and the guy literally reached out like, we're starting an editing system. And it's like, all right, cool. Like, come, you know, a guy came in and met with me, and you know, we kind of got it going, and we had some of our student managers and different people in the program who kind of ran it, organized it for us. And yeah, and nowadays, again, you can literally, you know, it's crazy, the development. But yeah, it was like you said, deck to deck, and you know, pause it, write down the number. I mean, it's crazy what it used to be. And but yeah, it's you know, it's a constant evolution. But yeah, I've really grown to enjoy Twitter. I mean, I know there's a lot of things about Twitter that aren't always great, but to me, it's I just want to share things that I read that are meaningful to me, that, you know, someone who follows me or sees it maybe hadn't read that article, and maybe it helps that person. And that's kind of what I use Twitter for, just the ability to see, you know, obviously you follow the people you want to follow and people you think have good content and are relevant to what you do. But I just like to share things that I read that some word, some sentence, some paragraph struck me, and maybe it strikes someone else. So it's that's kind of how I got into it, and that's kind of my goal. It's not you know, self promotion or anything like that, but there's just so many good people on Twitter to follow, you know, with, be it basketball content, leadership, life skills, whatever it may be. There's so much good stuff out there. So you know, we're probably on Twitter too much, like all of us, but I do try to be productive with my time on it.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. You got to be the fastest learner in the room. You got to keep up and keep it, yep, going and moving, yep, forward with it. And you know, how can we find you on social media? Where can we find all these good articles that you're putting out?
Yeah, I gotta look. I don't even have my Twitter. I'm looking as you say that on my phone, because I don't even have my I don't even know what my name is. Coach Bruce Ham. So you know, Coach, and then Bruce, and then the first three letters of my last name. And you know, like I said, I just think it's a great tool. You know, if you use it properly and wisely, I just think there's so much content out there in today's world that you can find. And yeah, I think that's the thing I struggle with at times, of how to organize that content. That's kind of in my mind one of those off-season projects, of just figuring a way to be better with, you know, yeah, I probably have 100 things bookmarked on my Twitter page, but how do I, the next level, all right, how do I somehow find this and have access to, all right, here's a file without underplays or articles or, you know, whatever the case may be. Because I think we can get so overwhelmed with the content that we see. And, you know, like all of us probably, you know, you go on Twitter for something that you have in mind, and now all of a sudden you're three different things removed from your initial intent. And like, oh, that's a great article, I read that, and then it's a link to something else. And it's like, oh my God, where'd that 40 minutes go where I really was looking for one simple thing? So that's kind of an off-season project in my mind, that kind of use Twitter better in terms of organizationally, so I can find stuff that I like and see.
Yeah, that organization is extremely important with that type of stuff. There's so much content, like you're saying, out there. It's learning how to filter it, learning how to, I mean, we could absorb all the information in the world, but if we can't share it in a way where others understand, it's very difficult. And, you know, doing that, I call it, I worked with a leadership coach, Scott Savore, and he does a really good job. And one thing he challenged me to do was to basically do a self audit on your materials and what you have. And so, you know, filter stuff down that, you know, this is good. No, I want great. And how can I, yep, utilize the great terminology or the great words or great, you know, tools or techniques or questions to ask to try and put yourself in a position where you can, you know, be clear and utilize clarity and structure and all those types of things. I think it's extremely important. You know, one thing just visiting with you is you could tell, you know, one of your, you know, I guess core values or something would be humility. You know, you're very grateful. You have a lot of, you know, awareness of what you are and who you are and where you fit in the landscape of basketball and things. How have you, you know, staying in one region of the country, getting multiple different jobs, having a chance to be at the professional level, Division I level, being a head coach, and then last year went through adversity where, you know, you weren't retained at a position. How do you, in this business that's getting more and more competitive, more and more quote-unquote rotten, how do you stop from becoming bitter and stay getting better and continue to, you know, bring your best every single day in this business when it's not always the easiest, even though we are fortunate to be in it?
Yeah, that's an awesome question. That might be the best question I've ever been asked on podcasts I've done. That's a terrific question. Wow. Yeah, you know, I try to be humble and probably to be truthful as I look back over my career, it's probably hurt me a little bit that I probably wasn't self-promoting myself more, where I just felt, you know, I'm doing a good job and my work will speak for itself. And I can live with myself with that. But, you know, in retrospect, I probably should have been more self-promoting and telling people what a great coach I was. And I always felt, you know, the work would speak for itself and other people would say that, which they have. And I think the work has spoken for itself. Yeah, I think I've been able to, you know, kind of survive in this profession and keep advancing and keep working. Just, I think based on that I do think I have a good reputation and people know what I'm about. I've always just, again, tried to treat people the right way. And, you know, I think if you do that as a young coach and you believe in that, and you kind of live that people, I think it comes off. People see that, you know, people know who you are. I think in this profession, there are so many different personalities that you can tell who the good people are in this business. And hopefully that enables you to, not that it enables you to get jobs, but it enables you to work in good situations. I've been fortunate, just I've worked with and for really good people. And hopefully, you know, like all of us, you hope you bring value to that and bring value to the program and to the kids. And it is getting more and more difficult. Again, it's I think it's a great profession. I don't know if it's a good business. You know, that's kind of what I've always said to people. And it's getting more and more of a business and more difficult. And, you know, especially this time of the year, you see guys who lose their jobs and who are good coaches and good people that, you know, maybe, you know, retrospect, not a good job to take, but, you know, everyone wants to be a head coach. And sometimes you got to take jobs that aren't good jobs. I do know every year, and I really believe in this, every year this time of the year when I go to the Final Four, and you see guys who are out of work, and obviously this year will be the first time in a couple years that we all see each other in person. So I am looking forward to that. But I do think this time of the year always, for my entire career, kind of, again, goes back to like, yeah, we're fortunate to be doing this. Because you see guys in hotel lobbies that are good coaches that don't have jobs that are scrambling. And I've always just, you know, that I guess has always been part of my, you know what, don't complain about the job you have because you got a good job. And even, quote unquote, a bad job is a good job in this profession because, you know, we all want to be working. This is what we do. So, yeah, I just think, treat people the right way, be a good guy, you know, keep learning, keep trying to get better. You know, none of us have all the answers by any stretch of the imagination. And I think that's the other thing this time of the year too, is it's such a good time. And I would say this to all the young guys, you know, that are aligned with you, like, this is such a great time to study coaches and study leaders, you know, the press conferences and, you know, just how guys respond to so many different situations. Because at the end of the day, there's only one school that's going to be happy. You know, everyone else is going to be miserable. You know, this weekend, there's eight schools and players and programs that are, you know, after Friday are going to be miserable. And after Sunday, there's going to be four that are in heaven and euphoria. But, you know, this time of the year really, I think, reveals a lot about coaches. And I just think it's a great time to study coaches and leadership and how they respond and, you know, how in their worst moments, how they are, you know, with the other team, with the coach, you know, like, again, I know he's had a rough month, Juwan Howard, but I thought the other day was great with the kid from Tennessee, you know, just his response. And, you know, when he was hugging the kid and the kid was so upset and like that was just a real moment, you know. And again, 2 weeks, 3 weeks ago, it was a real moment when he reacted in the Wisconsin game. So, I mean, talk about seeing the range of emotions and coaching and the behaviors. But, you know, I don't know him. I've never met the guy. Obviously, I know who he is. I'd like to think the other day was more who he is, you know, when just a kid needed someone out of his program. And, you know, like, I don't know, that's kind of the cool thing this time of the year. So I just think it's a great opportunity for all of us to kind of, like you said, kind of recalculate ourselves and look at ourselves in the off season. And, you know, not that we're all going to be in that moment, but how would I respond? You know, how do I respond to things, you know, when my players need me or my assistants need me or my family needs me? You know, we all get torn in so many directions during the season. You kind of lose track of probably the people that are the most important, the ones that are, you know, there for you every day supporting you, but you kind of lose track of that as well. So, it's kind of a cool time of year as a coach and just a great opportunity to learn and, just observe, you know, that's always been something I've tried to really do is be an observer. And, you know, I don't need to be the loudest guy in the room and I don't need to be the guy talking all the time. I think, you know, the guys talking all the time are probably not learning as much as the people who are sitting there being quiet and listening.
Yeah. That's, you know, go back to the two ears, one mouth. But, you know, I think, you know, perspective, to wrap up what you just said is so important of where we are in the landscape and what you see and what you want to, you know, do you want to live a life that you want repeated and replicated and recorded? And, you know, in this day and age, we're basically always being recorded and watched. Yep. And, you know, modeling other people's behaviors in a good way, bad way, I think is extremely valuable. You know, not all heroes are people that do everything right. You can learn from people that do things wrong as well. And, you know, Juwan Howard is a perfect example of that. And, you know, sports brings out like some crazy emotions and nothing's better than like, the March Madness emotion part of it and the music that goes with it, the hoopla and the energy. And, you know, we all catch like a bug in the whole country and, you know, want to be stubbornly right about who we pick and different things. But yeah, just enjoying sports. And we've kind of missed that the last couple of years and we're lucky to have it back in essence. And, you know, how you handle emotions is so important, you know, how you handle and react versus, you know, responding to what is correct. And, you know, that I just think is really important stuff to keep in perspective. Like you said, you talked about family, like, or where you're like basically emptying your emotions. Cause for 6 months of the year, we're normal people, quote unquote. And for 6 months of the year, we're too busy to even take a phone call. And like, yep. You know, there's a difference in trying to be present where your feet are and, you know, to acknowledge like even those people or, you know, coaches' wives, you see those people on they're just as crazy or if not more emotional than the coaches. And, you know, just think about the life that they go through or the supportiveness that they have. And, you know, I'm very grateful to have a wife that supports, you know, my dreams and lives in Mississippi for me, you know, and does different things that, you know, she's just as screaming and yelling and wants things and yelling at referees. And it's just funny, like the emotion that kind of goes into it. But even those people, you know, it's not just one person or one coach or one staff or one player. It's all the people and support that go into emptying their lives into these people and investing in it. And, you know, it's not always success. Like you said, you know, just being, you know, the process and the lessons that you learn throughout it. Yeah. There's going to be one person that's one group or family or program that's extremely happy and fan base, but you know, it's not always about the wins and losses when it gets down to it. So I think that's important things to do. So as we kind of wrap up here, you know, I'm really appreciative of you and some of your points and things I think are extremely important. Is there anything that, you know, I should have asked that I haven't, or that you want to say one more thing? Like you've said some really good stuff for young coaches and anything else that you feel like very passionate about that, you know, you think is important or relevant to our listeners?
Excuse me. No, I think you've hit on it. Things that I would want to talk about. Yeah. I mean, obviously I would say to people, if you listen and, you know, don't hesitate to contact me, you know, via social media or to reach out if I could ever be of advice, to anyone or give advice? Because again, as a young guy, I was fortunate just to have really good people in this profession to look up to. So I think all of us as coaches, we, you know, as competitive as this business is, we got to be there for each other and help each other out. And again, I think what you guys do is terrific. I mean, I know if I had access to something like this, I'm sure you feel the same as a young guy growing up in this business. I'd probably even be better, you know, just what you provide to people. I think it's just a platform of learning. And you know, again, if some young guy listens to this and takes something from what I'm saying, one point, then great, you know, that then, you know, hopefully I've helped someone. But yeah, I just think it's, you know, we just have to, again, keep perspective as coaches of really like why we do. And that's, you know, and again, I know everyone says that on different, you know, podcasts and articles, like, what's your why? But like, that's a great question for guys to figure out, like, why are you doing this? Like, because again, if you want to be whoever, the next Jay Wright, the next Bill Self, there, the odds are it ain't happening. Like, you're not going to, you know, like, yes, someone, there's some 25-year-old kid who will be the next Jay Wright or Bill Self or, you know, Tom Izzo, Coach K, whoever. But the reality of it is, like, most of us aren't doing that. So, like, why are we doing this? That's, I think, a really, again, like, off-season project for coaches. Like, figure that out. Like, why are you doing this? Like, what is the purpose of this? Because I think that's crucial. And I think if you kind of have a sense of why you're doing this, then, yeah, then you're going to be successful. And again, to your point, you're going to be successful, and it might not have anything to do with wins and losses. I mean, we all want to win. That's obvious. But, like, figure, like, why you're doing this and what motivates you to get up in the morning and then improve it. Keep working on it. You know, keep getting better. And I think that's hopefully someone can take from someone like myself who's been doing this a long time. That's still kind of, I think, what motivates me. Like, just figure out how to keep getting better and how to stay relevant and be relevant and improve and, you know, be there for the players, be there for the head coach you're serving and the other assistants you're working with. And I don't know, just, again, it's not that hard. Just, like, be a good person. And to your point, and again, I agree just so much, like, there's so much emotion in this game. But when there's not that moment of emotion, because you think about that, we're all doing this. We play 30 games a year. Like, we do all this stuff. And that's why I always say it to the players, like, you do all this work for 30 times a year. Like, how can't you not be ready to play when there's only 30 opportunities or whatever, 31 opportunities? So same as a coach, like, we do all this for 30 games, but we're doing everything else. I mean, whatever it is, 300 and something days a year that we're not having a game. So, like, you better figure out as a coach, like, why you're doing this, because you only get 30 times a year to do it. There's a lot more that goes into game day. So just, I don't know, just keep trying to get better and improve your craft and your skill. And again, stay relevant with what's going on. And just, I don't know, just be a good, I know it's cliche and it sounds corny, but just, like, be a good person. Like, it ain't that hard. Be, you know, we're all gonna, trust me, I've had plenty of times where I've, you know, I don't want to come across like I'm holier than now with this, because I've been many days where it's like, really, like, you said that, or, you know, like, you made a player feel that way with what you said. And I, you know, again, I come off as quiet, but as a head coach, I was, you know, every other word was not a good word out of my mouth with officials. And so I've learned to just kind of take the emotion out of it and just have that kind of bigger point of view of things, of what we're really doing here.
Yeah. I think that's a great 24-hour challenge to all of our listeners, is, hey, write down your why. What is it that you do? Because, like you said, yeah, you might have 30 game days, but if you treat every day like it's game day, I think it can change your perspective. And if you really break it down from that, you know, each game's about, you know, a little less than 2 hours. I mean, you're doing everything you're doing for 60 hours.
Yep.
A whole year. So, you know, where do you find that whole grand scheme of things? I think is a really unique perspective. And, you know, you got to think about it, what it is that you're really doing and why. My last question for you as we wrap up. So, you know, this is, you got to do this in 60 seconds or less if you can do it. What is the best thing that can happen in your life right now? Coach Bruce Hamburger, what is the best thing that can happen in your life? Right.
Well, that's another great question. You know, again, I'll go back to everything I said. Just be better. And again, I know it's corny and cliche, but like learn a couple things today. Be better. And to what we were just saying before, be better, but know how to transfer that to someone else. Like don't just keep, you know, the better info in my mind. How am I able to get that out to someone else? How am I able to get that to a player? Or again, as you said, maybe something I tweet that someone reads, I come across a good article or a thought. And I don't know, I've really gotten into that as I've gotten old. Just share things with people. Don't keep everything inside and just figure out how to improve and how to make the people around you better. And I think if we can all do that as coaches, like our players get better, the game gets better, the profession gets better. You know, like again, we're all competitive, so we all want to find that edge and kind of keep it to ourselves. But yeah, there's no secrets anymore. There's, oh my God, that's the greatest out of bounds play. No one's going to see it. Well, everyone's going to see it. It's on Synergy and it's on, you know, Zach Beauvais put it on his Twitter page, and you know, there's no secrets anymore. So share the info and share the knowledge that we all have, and you know, help all of us kind of just keep getting better.
Yeah, there's a lot of uncommon, you know, advantages that you can have, but knowledge is important. But being able to share that knowledge in a practical way, I think, is even more important. And yep. You know, do so with, you know, some conviction and some power and some juice behind it to make it even more like a motivational in a way, but you know, keep those habits. So I appreciate your time. Thank you for doing this. And you know, thanks again for, you know, visiting with us and sharing your wisdom.
No, thank you. It's been great to be with you. I really appreciate it.